Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Understand, defend, and share your faith with confidence. This is Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
Thank you for joining us on Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson, and before we hear from today's guest, just a quick reminder to visit premierunbelievable.com for more shows, articles, and resources. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, then please do consider rating and reviewing it on your podcast platform. But now for today's show. Sunday, the 10th of March, is Mothering Sunday here in the UK. And while this will be a cause of celebration for many, it's also a day that so many people struggle with for a plethora of different reasons. And one person who I think has spoken both vulnerably and so beautifully about this topic is the incredible makeup artist Hannah Martin. Hannah has had over 20 years experience in the industry, and she's worked with some of the world's most famous faces, from supermodels to princesses. British Vogue named her, I think totally rightly so, the queen of radiant skin and smoky eye tutorials. Hannah was resident makeup expert on 10 Years Younger in 10 Days, which won Best Fashion and Makeup Show when she was on it. And last year, she released the Sunday Times bestseller book, Makeup, a Masterclass in Beauty, which normally sits in pride of place on my bookshelf alongside all of my academic books, but here is right next to me today because it's such an incredible book and I am so excited to have her on the show. Hannah, let's talk about Mother's Day, because I know it can be such a tough day for so many, and I so appreciate your willingness to talk about this today. And I know I said this off camera, but please take your time. And if this just gets too much, we can stop at any time. But you have spoken on so many occasions so powerfully about the impact of losing your incredible mum, Diana Dee. On a day like Mother's Day, where mentions of mum are so often really overt and in your face, and it's kind of hard to escape lots of those mentions, how can we be really sensitive towards those who are grieving, I guess, their mother, but other people, and no matter where they are on their grieving journey, it can still be a really, really painful place, can't it?
It's really tricky because, you know, as someone who, if my mum was alive still, I'm sure I'd be that person, you know, openly celebrating and honouring my mum, you know, with gushing posts. So I absolutely understand why people do it, and I never want people to not do it. But I suppose what I really appreciate is when people are sharing emphatically about their brilliant mums and stuff. All it takes is a tiny acknowledgement for those people for whom either it's a triggering image or it just deepens kind of the pain and hurt that you're feeling when you're missing your mum on a day like that. So, and I've kind of had interacted with people online about that kind of thing, because I know that there are so many helpful images now, you kind of, you know, where it states, you know, on Mother's Day, thinking of those who are motherless, waiting to be mums, estranged from their mums. Do you know what I mean? And I think those are really lovely images. And someone once said, you know, oh, what's wrong with people? People should just be able to celebrate their mums on Mother's Day without having to caveat everything. And I responded and was like, actually, I just think it's a case of being compassionate and empathetic and sensitive to those who are grieving, because, you know, I speak from experience. You know, I miss my mum all year round. You know, it's not just Mother's Day, but Mother's Day packs a particular punch, and I do share about my mum on Mother's Day because I feel, you know, I have so few moments to celebrate her now that she's not here, but it's a moment to acknowledge her. But also just to acknowledge that there are so many people out there, either whose mums are passed or they don't have relationships with their mum, or relationships are tricky or whatever. So I just feel like it's really important to recognise those people, because there's nothing more valuable than feeling like you're seen, you know.
Hannah, you've also shared really powerfully some of your painful journey around the struggles that you've had with fertility and miscarriage. Do you think there are particular ways that we can support people who are experiencing these heartbreaking situations? I suppose particularly on days like Mother's Day or anniversaries when it can feel especially raw for people.
So again, I think, so my husband spoke about this recently at a conference, and he said three things. So ask, acknowledge, action were kind of the three points. So if you know your friends are going through an infertility journey or they've lost their parent or whatever, ask them how they are. Acknowledge their feelings, validate their feelings, and then act upon what they've said. Because sometimes, like a glib thinking of you is such a nice gesture, but it's half-hearted, because it's nice to know that people are thinking of you, but you haven't actually asked what I'm feeling today. And if you don't know how I'm feeling today, how can you journey alongside it with me? If someone says, actually, I can't cope with today, I just want to hide under my duvet, da-da-da, you want to say that to someone who will then be like, I get it. I can't understand because I haven't been through it, but I'm so sorry that's how you're feeling. And then like do something. I remember when my mum died, and it seemed like, and this is possibly a really British thing, but there were quite a few times where people would text me and go, do let me know if there's anything I can do. And I was like, I don't have the bandwidth or the brain space to brush my teeth, and you're asking me to think of something menial that I can ask you to do that's going to make you feel better and like you've done something to help me, when actually that's not about me at all, that's about you feeling better. Which sounds so like mean, but I didn't realize how grief can really just addle your brain and you really can't think clearly. So I learned something from someone who wrote a brilliant book called Breaking Dawn, and one of her mantras is, don't let what you can't do get in the way of what you can do. So no one could bring my mum back, no one could ease the pain of losing a baby, but you could pop round with some flowers, you could turn up at the front door. Like our old vicar turned up one day with a banana bread, and it was like the best banana bread I've ever tasted. You can go round, like I do it to friends of mine now, if they're in a tricky phase, I'll go around and I'll just do the washing up and I'll tidy up what I can see that needs doing. So don't underestimate just small gestures, whether it's a lasagna you've left on a doorstep or a plant. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have to necessarily be materialistic. You could just turn around and be like, I've got this massive bag, chuck me your laundry and I'll laundry it for you and drop it around tomorrow, whatever. Don't let what you can't do get in the way of what you can do.
You've also listed some really helpful resources, I know, on your Instagram, like Saying Goodbye by Zoe Clark Coates, and the retreat that you guys are involved in. Is it Rhythms of Hope? Rhythm of Hope. There's various things that you've listed on your Instagram. There are so many great things out there where people can turn to you for support. But I think you're right. A lot of it is just about being there and doing those little things and I guess taking the pressure off people, as you say, having to think about what are those things. Hannah, you are now a mum of two gorgeous, gorgeous little people. But I know that mumming is not always easy. Do you have anything that you would want to share with those who are really struggling with motherhood? Maybe it's postnatal depression, crippling anxiety, overwhelming guilt. There's just so many facets of motherhood that are really tricky, aren't there?
Yeah, and I would say that if you are struggling, then I can guarantee you are not alone. I don't actually really know anyone who's ever not shared a particular struggle when it comes to parenting. So, you know, if I think back to the early days, especially after Bear was born, like it was a bleak time. And I think so many of us, we are so excited about impending parenthood, and especially if we've struggled or these are babies post-nos, there's an extra weight of like, oh gosh, well, I've asked all these people to pray that I would indeed, you know, birth a child, and now I've got this child and I need to be so grateful and I can't possibly let them know that this is hard in any way. But I will say that absolutely no one's going to judge you if you do share or you do feel like you need support. So please, 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 if you're struggling, do reach out for support. There are so many avenues out there. I think now even just kind of online support groups, if you're not up to meeting face to face, but yeah, even if it's just telling your health visitor or your GP that you're struggling, you don't feel like you have to hide it. Like, or I think all new parents struggle. It's a really, no, there's no, I'm just gonna say, there's no manual to how to parent. The problem is there are so many manuals.
There's too many.
It's really overwhelming and every child is different. But yes, please know you're not alone. And by asking for help doesn't make you a bad parent. It makes you a better parent, actually.
Hannah, are there anything specifically that the church or Christians can be doing to support people struggling with these things?
I think there's a lot of room for maybe improvement in how churches support those grieving for whatever reason that might be. Certainly my experience was that I didn't feel supported in church. I didn't feel necessarily recognised for what I was going through. We had a prayer space at our church at the time, but it was right at the front of church, so you kind of had to walk through the entire church, and then it felt very like a very public place to be grieving. And I found it really interesting that people knew what we were going through, but the kind of outreach was almost non-existent, bar a visit from the vicar himself. And I just think that churches are places where actually I think God calls us to do our best with all people at all times. And I think certainly in the UK there's something cultural about, oh, you know, they're really sad, so we'll just leave them to it. Where actually I think we need to get uncomfortable in stepping into people's grief and be like, I'm really sorry, I don't understand, I've not been through this, but I'm here. How can I support you best? What can we do together to help you feel supported? It blows my mind that some churches don't have like pastoral lists, you know, of people that just like, who's struggling in our community that we know of. Oh, you know, we've heard that X, Y, and Z. Okay, cool. What's their phone numbers? Let's make sure we call this week and check in, or just let's make sure we pop around to these people, or if we see them in church, let's make sure that we go up to them and ask them how they're doing. Because if you're grieving and you can't face a conversation, I think you can learn quite quickly how to handle that, like either not go, which I know I did many, many Mother's Days. You wouldn't see me anywhere near a church because I couldn't handle either, you know, other people's celebrations, which sounds awful, but it was just too painful. But also to sit there and then not be acknowledged as a motherless person or someone who'd recently lost a child. So I do think there is space within church communities for acknowledging people's pain and doing better at coming alongside and supporting really kind of practically. Like if I just had a couple of visits, especially from older people within the church, you know, when you don't feel parented. You know, I've longed to be adopted by like a surrogate. Do you know what I mean? Like an older person. And sadly, in the decade I needed most, that didn't happen. You know, my mum had died. Si's parents lived in Kenya. So we were just kind of muddling on through. So I do think churches need to look out for their young people, look out for those that they know are going through hard times and step into that gap and try and love them the way Jesus would have loved them.
I'm so sorry that was your experience, Hannah.
I know, it's so sad, isn't it? I also think when you experience grief at a young age, your peers maybe haven't been through it. So, you know, at the time we were going through kind of infertility and loss, actually none of our friends locally, very fertile bunch, Rue, like none of them were struggling in the same area. So you just feel really isolated. And at the time, I'm trying to think if I knew anyone who'd lost a parent. Don't think I did, you know. And if anything, what our friends were saying were like, come on guys, snap out of it, come back to home group, come on. It's been 2 weeks now. And I just remember being like, oh, I can barely get dressed in the morning. Do you mean my first miscarriage was actually all intertwined with losing my mum? So she found out we were pregnant on the 17th of August. She died on the 27th of August. And we buried her on the 2nd of September, and I lost the baby on the 2nd of September. So, such a bleak, dark day. I missed my mum's wake because I was at the hospital. And yeah, it's just not something you can snap out of or recover from. And sometimes having a faith makes it harder, because someone shared a word with Simon at the practice the night before the funeral, being like, no, God, I know God's going to sustain this life. You're not going to lose this baby in Jesus' name. And he came back and he told me that. And I was like, thank you, Lord. Amazing. Not losing the baby. This is wonderful. Of course, because you hold on to whatever you can. So to then bleed profusely throughout my mum's funeral service, I was so utterly devastated. I couldn't believe it.
We're going to take a quick break now. But if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
You're listening to Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
This podcast is an outreach of Premier Insight, and it's made possible through the support of listeners like you. And your support today is so vital. We want to thank you for your generous gift by giving you exclusive access to Science, Faith and the Evidence for God Apologetics course. This 9-module course invites you to learn from John Lennox, one of the most celebrated Christian thinkers of our time, through conversations with atheist thinker Michael Ruse and secular talk show host Dave Rubin. You'll be empowered to confidently speak into conversations on faith, science, and why believing in God is not only reasonable, but logical. The course is free to you to thank you for your gift to help Premier Insight equip more Christians to confidently speak into the biggest issues of our culture and defend their Christian faith with conviction and grace. To get access to Science, Faith, and the Evidence for God, simply go to premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. That's premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. Unbelievable show. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Hannah, how should churches do Mother's Day, Mothering Sunday? How do we do that sensitively?
So I've thought about this for years and years and years, because, you know, I've sat through services where mothers are invited to come and, you know, pick up a pot of Busy Lizzies from the front, or go and get a chocolate, da-da-da, and kind of like a cumulative or like a prayer over all the mothers. And whilst that's a wonderful thing to do, and I don't want to take away from that because it is beautiful, I think acknowledging that's what it is, acknowledging that for many, Mother's Day is really painful. And it's potentially an area in people's lives where it's actually the biggest beef they have with God, because they're like, come on, I've been on my knees. You know, you've let me think it's going to happen, and I've lost, like, what on earth is going on here? So I think churches, if they can acknowledge, it could be that it's a trigger warning the week before. Guys, it's Mothering Sunday next Sunday. We're going to be sharing a moment where we honor and celebrate the mums in our community. We understand that could be really painful for you. And if that's a moment where you want to leave the room, feel free. There is no judgment. If you would like prayer, and if you are grieving in the anticipation of Mother's Day, like, please come speak to the leadership team, come and find someone. We will be here to pray with you. And then on the day itself, acknowledging, if anyone's missed that trigger warning, we are aware that for many, you are here today with your heart heavy and broken. And we acknowledge you, and we just want to take a moment to pray for you in your sadness, da 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 da. So just acknowledging. And yeah, making sure those people in the room don't feel invisible.
I think that's really helpful. Thank you.
For most of them, I think it's amazing that they're even there. Do you know what I mean? Like, the courage it takes for those, I think, who are grieving on Mother's Day to even step in the door, you know, is a big deal. And if also recognizing the silence, I think maybe we need to get better at that. And again, potentially that's a cultural thing, but you know, the quieter someone is around something, potentially the harder it is for them. So if they're not there on Mothering Sunday, maybe think, why might they not be there, and reach out.
Hannah, you've shared so many painful experiences, and I'm so grateful for what you shared. But in the midst of those really deep despair moments, what have been some of your sources of strength and support in those awful times?
It's funny, isn't it? Because I think our infertility season spanned like a decent decade, first with both primary infertility, miscarriage, and then secondary infertility. And I would say that both Simon and I would agree that, you know, there were times when we felt probably the furthest we've ever felt from God, from our friends, like so isolated. But we also knew that, you know, that God is real and God is true. And it, like, I'd say, like, words to songs were so meaningful and important to us at the time, even if I couldn't sing them. Do you know what I mean? So I would recite them in my head. But I think, you know, grief is a massive thief of joy, right? And certainly I couldn't praise in that season, or praise was incredibly hard. You know, there's nothing more challenging than singing songs about how wonderful and loving God is when you're like, why? How? Because I'm not feeling that at all right now, because you haven't come through with my request to protect this pregnancy, and you haven't come through with my request for healing for my mom. I know you're capable, but you haven't. So how does that work? So yes, I found the words to songs very helpful at the time, even if I couldn't sing them.
And Hannah, this might just be impossible to answer, but how do we hold on to hope in those situations when everything just feels so hopeless?
Yeah, I don't know. And I feel like so much of what I do now is I want to help people journey better than I did, because I don't feel like we journeyed that well. But one of the smallest things that was so powerful to Simon and I was my best friend's mum came round one day and she brought a little figurine, and it's of a child, which seems like, when you say that, you're like, oh, ouch. But it was of a small person, and they've got an arm outstretched holding a balloon, and the balloon says hope in it. And it was kind of like, just like, you might have to really stretch to keep hold of it, but just keep hold of hope. And that was so powerful, and we still have it up in the sitting room downstairs. It's not always easy to do, but I think once you lose hope, then it can feel like you've lost everything. So, yeah, I would just encourage people to dig deep and not lose hope. Easier said than done, I know, because there are some days where it feels hopeless. But dig deep if you can.
What are some of your favourite memories of your incredible mum?
Oh no. Do you know what? Like, she just used to make me laugh so hard.
She
remember.
She did have the best laugh in the world.
Like, such a good laugh, such a good smile. Like, she was one of those people who was so good at meeting you wherever you were at. So, whether it was, you know, I remember her coming to visit me at uni because of, you know, Simon problems. And she was just there to kind of give me a massive hug on the bed and be like, babes, it's okay. Like, it's fine. Like, she always validated. Like, you know, I told her I loved him when I was probably 15. And instead of being like, oh, bless you, child, of course you don't, she was like, no, I get it. You do, it's amazing. No, I know. Do you know what I mean? She always kind of, yeah, did never make me feel stupid for declaring my love so young. But some funny memories, like me and my sister took her to a live show of the comedy programme Little Britain, which was always quite like risque, and I don't think it could be on the television now. I think they'd been cancelled. And there was at one point, there was a particular joke, and my sister and I, without knowing, were both like, oh my gosh, they pushed it too far, this is awful. and we look down the row of seats, and my mum was just there sobbing with laughter. So she was always up for a laugh. She was great fun. When I think back, it took me a long time to think of her positively, actually, and I had therapy for it because I could only picture her dead in her bed, and it was so horrible. But thankfully, that's lifted, and I can now think of her physically healthy and at her best. And yeah, when I think happy memories, it's always her laughing. She was so full of joy, despite not always having an easy time.
Tell me about the nappy pin.
Oh, the nappy pin. So my mum, have I not got it next to me? I should have done. My mum loved makeup. And as a child, you know, I honestly thought she was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. And I'd sit at her feet as she sat at her dressing table. And mascara for her was like a meditation. Like, it wasn't a 3-second thing. It was curled meticulously. So the lashes were literally like at 90 degrees. And then, you know, she'd so fastidiously put on her mascara. She'd always lick her finger and like try and kind of comb them and fan them. And then, and I still have the mirror that she had as well, she'd sit there with the mirror slotted between her fingers and she'd get this nappy pin. And don't do this at home, folks. And she would use the nappy pin to unpick the eyelashes so that what she was left with is sort of perfect fan, both top and bottom. And so when people now are like, why do you always see mascara on the lower lashes? It looks really spidery. I'm like, no, spiders is where it's at. My mom rocks the spider look. So yeah. Definitely do not use a nappy pin. There are mascara combs. You could just use a fresh spoolie wand. You don't have to use something quite so dangerous. But yeah, I loved watching her do that. And weirdly, now those nappy pins are some of my favourite possessions.
Hannah, your mum has obviously inspired your makeup journey. And as you've spoken about, that you as a young girl kind of watched her and learned some tips, perhaps some tips we may not put into practice anymore. but many, many younger people now learn their makeup tips online. And obviously, we're going to share some links to some of your incredible videos. But one of the questions someone asked me is where can older people go for makeup tips if they're maybe not as comfortable with modern tech? And do you have any top tips specifically for more mature skin? I know you talk about it lots in this book, but if you could give just a top tip of where older people might be able to go and if you've got any tips for their skin.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I would say to anyone, my gosh, go online, because there are a wealth of tutorials aimed at the more mature person for more mature skin. But I understand if you are not tech savvy and that's not accessible, then it might not be everyone's cup of tea. But trust me, everyone who works on a makeup counter in store is trained in at least the makeup that they're selling. And I think now that, you know, pro aging and ageism is so being brought into the light, I think there is no brand out there that wouldn't know how best to cater for more mature skin. From my point of view, what I will say is that a simple makeup update can be so refreshing. I meet lots of people who maybe are continuing to practice the makeup that they applied when they felt their best, which was possibly in their late teens or early 20s. And actually, sometimes those tones, those shades, aren't quite as flattering on a slightly more mature skin as hair tone changes, as skin texture changes. So my number one tip, I think, for people wanting to look fresh and current is that, you know, glowing skin is always in. So whilst there can be trends for matte bases, actually matte skin is quite hard to pull off, no matter your age. And I think a more mature skin looks beautiful in a glowing, radiant base. So look to something like Estee Lauder Futurist Hydra Rescue. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it's a really lovely hydrating base.
You are so wonderful at engaging with your online followers. So I'm sure you're already doing this and I'm sure you're going to do it even more as we lead up to Mother's Day. But is there anything that you would want to say to someone who you know is going to find Mother's Day really tough this year?
What I would say to someone approaching Mother's Day and struggling for whatever reason, I would just say, first and foremost, I understand that it's incredibly painful. I understand that you're going to be triggered left, right and centre, whether it's through adverts on your TV, adverts on your social media platforms, walking past the card shop on the high street. I understand your pain. I see your pain, and your pain is absolutely valid. Like, let go of any guilt you feel. Your grief doesn't take away from other people's joy. So just know that if you are struggling, it's okay. And I see you, and I'm sorry, and I get it, and it sucks.
Hannah, thank you so, so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Is there anything you want people to know about what you've got coming up, any collaborations, any new exciting projects that you're allowed to tell us about that you're working on that you want people to get involved in?
I've got some really fun projects this year, none of which I think I can share yet.
That sounds really exciting.
Which is really annoying. But I do have a little jewellery something, and we've spoken about my inspiration during this chat, which is launching in time for Mother's Day, and the proceeds of sales are going to a cancer charity. So that's coming up, and that's cute, and I'm pleased we could do it.
Oh, that's very exciting. I will make sure that there's links to at Hannah Martin Makeup. It's the same on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, which is very helpful. But is that the best way to connect with you if people want to get in touch?
Perfect.
Hannah, thank you so much. You have been an absolute superstar.
Thank you for listening to Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson. And as always, you can find out more about our guests through the links with today's show. We would love to hear your feedback. Do drop us an email with your thoughts at unbelievable@premier.org.uk or get in touch via social media. And don't forget, there are more shows, articles and resources at our website, premierunbelievable.com. You can also register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
You've been listening to Unapologetic. For more shows, resources, and our newsletter, visit premierunbelievable.com.